Becatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Becatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive.
Today, we're tackling something huge, really. The history of everything. I mean, 13.8 billion years, right from the very beginning up to, well, right now.
It sounds ambitious, doesn't it? And it is. We're diving into David Christian's book, Origin Story, a big history of everything. And it's not just, you know, a timeline of events.
No, it's much more. It's this evidence-based attempt to weave together cosmology, physics, geology, biology, human history, all of it.
Into one single story. A unified narrative.
And I think that's why it feels so necessary now. Christian points out something crucial. Our knowledge today is so incredibly fragmented.
Right. You've got specialists who know everything about one tiny area.
Yeah. Cosmologists who maybe don't think much about plate tectonics, or historians who, you know, rarely look back further than a few thousand years. We kind of lose the connecting threads. We're stuck in our silos. And Christian's argument is, look, in this globalized world, we always need a modern scientific origin story that we can all sort of share. We need to see how all the pieces fit.
To understand where we are now, basically.
Exactly. And he gives us this amazing framework. His big idea is that complexity, new, interesting stuff, doesn't just creep up slowly. It happens in these big jumps, bursts. He calls them thresholds.
Thresholds of increasing complexity. But they don't just happen anywhere, do they?
No, that's the key. They're rare. They're fragile. They only happen when the conditions are absolutely perfect, what he famously calls the Goldilocks conditions.
Ah, the just right idea.
Precisely. Not too hot, not too cold, not too dense, not too empty. Everything has to align just so for something fundamentally new and more complex to emerge.
So let's talk about the person behind this whole way of thinking. David Christian. He didn't just write about big history.
No, he pretty much invented the academic field. Mm-hmm. It's quite a story. He actually trained at Oxford, specialized in Russian history, very much focused on the human scale.
Right, the last few thousand years.
Yeah, but he started feeling frustrated. He felt like traditional history started way too late, you know, only when people began writing things down maybe 5,000 years ago.
Which is, what, a tiny fraction of the human story, let alone the universe's story?
Exactly. Less than 1%, like you said. He realized, you know, if you really want to understand the human journey, you've got to connect it further back.
Back to the stars. Back to the planet forming.
All the way back. He wanted a framework that could actually bridge the sciences and the humanities.
Mm.
So this was back in the late 1980s. He developed the very first university course on big history.
That's quite a leap. From Russian history to, well, the history of everything. And it caught on, didn't it?
Oh, massively. It wasn't just some niche academic thing. It got huge international attention. Probably the biggest boost was when Bill Gates heard about it.
Right, the big history project.
Exactly. Gates was so taken with the idea of giving students this unified framework that he funded the Big History Project. It brought this whole interdisciplinary approach into high schools, you know, all over the world for free.
So Christian really has this unique perspective. He's spent decades figuring out how to translate, like, cosmology and geology into terms that someone interested in human society can actually grasp. He built the conceptual toolkit.
He's giving us a map, really, a map of time itself. Which brings us neatly to the core argument of Origin Story.
Okay, so the central idea is?
Basically that the universe's entire 13.8 billion year history is one coherent story. And the defining feature of that story is the emergence of things that are progressively more complex.
But it's not inevitable.
Not at all. Complexity is fragile, it's rare, it's contingent. Mm. It only pops up when those very specific Goldilocks conditions happen to be met.
And the book itself is structured around these moments, these thresholds.
That's right. 8 key thresholds. They act like chronological signposts, taking you step by step from the Big Bang right up to, well, us and the challenges we're facing now.
So for someone reading this or listening to us now, the point is to get context.
Yes.
Huge context. Christian wants to give us that big picture. So when we look at things like climate change or technological disruption or pandemics.
We don't just see them as isolated problems popping up today.
Exactly. We see them as the latest chapter, maybe the most high stakes chapter, in this incredibly long story about how energy flows and complexity evolves on this planet and, you know, in the universe.
It forces you to step back, doesn't it? To adopt that cosmic perspective he talks about. It pulls everything together. Physics, biology, human culture.
One single narrative. Okay, should we dive into the thresholds themselves? This is where the story really gets going.
Let's do it. So threshold one, the Big Bang, 13.8 billion years ago.
Yeah.
Bang, the universe appears. Well, maybe not quite a bang like an explosion in space, but the moment space and time themselves began. And crucially, the fundamental laws of physics get logged in. You get the simplest forms of energy and matter, mostly hydrogen and helium atoms. Simple stuff.
And the Goldilocks conditions here were.
Incredibly precise. It was things like the initial density of the universe and how fast it was expanding. Just a tiny bit denser, and gravity would have pulled it all back together too soon. Boom, crunch.
Game over before it started.
Right. A little less dense, and nothing would have ever clumped together. Stars wouldn't have formed. It had to be just right for structure to eventually emerge.
Okay, so the universe is stable, expanding. What's next?
Threshold two, the first stars and galaxies. Now gravity gets to work on those big clouds of hydrogen and helium. Over millions of years, it pulls them together
Tighter and tighter.
until the pressure and temperature at the core gets so intense. Boom, nuclear fusion ignites. The first stars are born.
And that's the first real jump in complexity.
You could say that. Stars are the first complex objects. They're like the universe's first engines, pumping out huge amounts of energy. But, as Christian points out, these first stars were still pretty simple, made mostly of hydrogen and helium. A crucial step, but not enough.
Not enough for life. Not enough for planets like ours.
Exactly. For that, you need heavier stuff. Carbon, oxygen, iron. The elements our bodies and our world are made of. That takes us to threshold three, new chemical elements.
Okay, so where did those come from?
From stellar death, basically. You need really massive stars, much bigger than our sun. They burn through their fuel incredibly quickly, live short, dramatic lives.
And then.
And then they go out with a bang, a massive explosion called a supernova. That explosion is the Goldilocks moment here. It's so violent it forges all those heavier elements inside the dying star and then blasts them out across space.
Ah, the cosmic recycling he talks about.
That's it. Without stars living, dying, and exploding, those essential elements would stay locked away. We literally wouldn't exist without supernovae seeding the universe with the necessary ingredients.
Which finally allows for threshold four, the Earth and the solar system, about 4.5 billion years ago.
Right. Now you've got enough of that enriched dust and gas floating around from previous generations of stars. It gathers together to form our sun and the planets, including the rocky inner ones like Earth.
But Earth needed its own special conditions, right? More Goldilocks stuff.
Oh, absolutely. Earth basically won the cosmic lottery. So many things had to be just right. The distance from the sun, not too hot, not too cold, so liquid water could exist on the surface. That's crucial.
Vapor water.
Then its size, big enough for its gravity to hold on to an atmosphere. And maybe the most underappreciated one, dynamic geology, plate tectonics.
The continents moving around,
What's that?
volcanoes.
Yes. That constant churning recycles materials. It helps regulate the climate over really long timescales. Without that geological engine constantly refreshing the surface and atmosphere, Earth might have just become a dead, stable rock like Mars or Venus.
Wow. Okay, so we have a planet with the right ingredients, the right temperature, water, a dynamic system that sets the stage for.
Threshold five, the emergence of life. Around 3.8 billion years ago, maybe even earlier, this is the huge leap from complex but non-living chemistry to actual living, self-replicating organisms.
How did that happen? That seems like the biggest jump of all.
It's still one of the biggest mysteries, but the key ingredients seem to be a constant flow of energy, like from the sun or geothermal vents, a rich soup of those chemical elements we talked about, and a liquid solvent water where those chemicals can mix and react.
And somehow, life sparks.
Somehow, chemistry becomes biology. You get these systems, maybe simple cells at first, that can maintain themselves, extract energy from their environment, replicate, and crucially adapt over time through Darwinian evolution. Natural selection becomes this incredibly powerful new engine driving change.
And that engine runs for billions of years, leading from simple cells to, well, eventually us.
Right. But then the pace of change shifts into ludicrous speed with the next threshold involving humans, threshold six, collective learning.
This is the big one for Homo sapiens, appearing maybe 200,000, 300,000 years ago.
Christian argues this is our unique advantage, our superpower. It's not just big brains. Lots of animals are smart. It's our ability to share complex information very precisely through symbolic language.
Talking, writing, art.
Exactly. And crucially, we can accumulate that information across generations. Knowledge doesn't die with the individual. It gets passed on, added to, built upon. Think of it like a species-wide software update that happens constantly, way faster than genetic hardware can evolve.
So we could adapt to almost any environment on Earth without waiting for biological evolution. We just shared information how to make clothes, how to find water, how to hunt different animals.
Precisely. And that superpower, collective learning, directly enabled Threshold 7, agriculture, starting around 10,000 years ago.
Right, learning how to manipulate plants and animals to get more food energy from a smaller patch of land.
A lot more energy. This allowed for food surpluses for the first time, really. People didn't have to constantly move around chasing food. They could settle down.
Which led to villages, then cities, then states and empires.
And huge population growth. But Christian is clear. This new complexity wasn't all good. It came with major downsides.
Like what?
Well, for the first time, you get significant social hierarchies, inequality, rulers, and ruled. And when you pack lots of people together with their animals, you get epidemic diseases spreading in ways that just weren't possible for small nomadic groups. A definite trade-off.
That's a really important point. Okay, so that brings us almost to the present, the final threshold.
Threshold 8, the modern revolution. This covers roughly the last 500 years. It's driven by two key things happening together.
Okay.
First, the entire world becomes interconnected into a single global network. Mm-hmm. Think shipping routes, trade, eventually telecommunications, and the internet. This massively accelerates collective learning. Ideas can spread everywhere incredibly fast.
And the second thing?
A fundamentally new source of energy. Fossil fuels. Coal, then oil, then natural gas.
Ancient sunlight stored underground.
Exactly. Suddenly, humanity had access to incredibly cheap, incredibly concentrated energy on a scale never seen before. This powered the Industrial Revolution, explosive economic growth, scientific breakthroughs, everything that defines the modern world.
And led us directly into what scientists now call the Anthropocene.
The age of humans.
Mm-hmm.
The era where one single species, us, has become the dominant force shaping the entire planet's geology, climate, and ecosystems. That's the end point of this 13.8 billion year story so far.
Wow. Okay, that's a lot to take in. Those eight thresholds cover everything. So pulling back a bit, what are the big themes we should take away from this?
Well, first, absolutely central is that idea of collective learning as humanity's defining trait. It really is what sets us apart.
It makes you think, doesn't it? Like every time you Google something or read a book, you're tapping into this vast reservoir built up over millennia. It's powerful, but maybe fragile too. We need to maintain the systems that allow that sharing.
Definitely. Second big theme, energy flows as the engine of change. Think about it. Stars need nuclear fusion. Life needs sunlight or chemical energy. Our modern world needs fossil fuels or, increasingly, renewables.
Right. So when we talk about energy policy today, switching energy sources,
we're actually talking about potentially navigating the next major transition in human history, maybe even a new threshold. All the big shifts in the past were tied to finding new ways to harness energy. It gives you perspective on the scale of what we're discussing.
Yeah, it's not just about economics. It's fundamental. What else?
Third, and this one really hits home for me, is the preciousness of complexity. When you see the chain of events, all the Goldilocks conditions that had to be just right.
The sheer improbability of it all, our planet, life, us.
It's extraordinarily rare in the universe, as far as we know. Our existence is this incredibly unlikely contingent thing.
That definitely fosters a sense of awe, but also maybe responsibility to protect these conditions we depend on.
I think so. A responsibility to maintain the Goldilocks conditions of Earth. And finally, maybe the unity of knowledge.
Breaking down those silos we talked about earlier.
Yeah. Seeing that physics, biology, history, they aren't separate subjects, really. They're just different chapters or different scales of one single immense interconnected story. It encourages you to look for connections everywhere.
Christian really has some memorable ways of summing these ideas up.
He does. His writing is full of these really clarifying statements.
Like the one that basically defines the whole book, the history of the universe is a history of emerging complexity. But new things do not appear just anywhere. They appear only when a precise set of Goldilocks conditions are met.
That's the fundamental rule, isn't it? It applies from the first atoms fusing in a star right up to the conditions needed for, say, the invention of the internet. Same principle, different scale.
And then the one about us. What makes humans different is not our large brains, but our ability to engage in collective learning.
That nails it. Our biology hasn't changed that much in hundreds of thousands of years. But look at our culture, our technology. That huge difference is collective learning in action. It's our species' defining trick.
And finally, the one that places us right now. For the first time in the 4.5 billion year history of our planet, a single species has become the main driver of change in the biosphere. We are now living in the Anthropocene.
A pretty sobering thought, really. It sums up both our incredible power derived from collective learning and fossil fuels, and the immense responsibility that comes with being a planet-altering force.
So, okay, this is fascinating, provides incredible perspective. But how does understanding all this actually help us in our daily lives? How do we apply it?
Well, one direct application is consciously trying to cultivate that cosmic perspective when you genuinely grasp the vastness of time and space involved.
Suddenly, that annoying email or the traffic jam seems a bit less significant.
Exactly. It can genuinely help reduce anxiety about everyday hassles.
Right.
It fosters humility and helps you maybe focus your energy on things that matter more in the, grand scheme of things.
It also seems like it would encourage long-term thinking, beyond the next quarter or the next election cycle.
Absolutely. Christian really pushes for long-termism. If you start thinking naturally on scales of thousands or millions of years geological time, you can't help but see the long-term consequences of our actions today much more clearly.
Things like resource depletion or climate change aren't abstract future problems anymore. They're direct threats to the Goldilocks conditions that allowed us to flourish in the first place. It makes sustainability feel urgent.
Right. And maybe the most profound application is how it deepens our sense of connection.
How so?
When you internalize the fact that the iron in your blood was forged in a star that exploded billions of years ago, that the oxygen you're breathing was produced by ancient bacteria.
You realize you're not separate from the universe. You're literally a part of its ongoing story, made of the same stuff.
Exactly. We're stardust that learned to think. That sense of profound interconnectedness with everything, the planet, other life forms, the cosmos itself, can foster real empathy and a sense of stewardship. We're all in this together, quite literally.
For me, reflecting on all this, the thing that really struck me was just how contingent it all feels, how incredibly unlikely complexity is. It's not some guaranteed march of progress.
No, it's a constant struggle against disorder, against entropy.
Right. It feels like a series of fragile victories. It definitely changed my appreciation for just how special and precarious our situation here on Earth actually is. We're not separate from the universe's story. We're this really remarkable, maybe pivotal chapter within it.
And I think the most powerful takeaway, the final thought for you listening, is that this story isn't finished. It's still unfolding right now. We are living threshold 8, grappling with the consequences of our own success, climate change, resource limits, inequality.
The challenges that threaten those very Goldilocks conditions.
Precisely. We don't know what the next threshold will be, or even if there will be one that continues complexity. And the crucial point is, we are the actors who get to influence that outcome. Our unique gift, collective learning, is the tool we have to navigate these challenges.
So we have to use it wisely.
We have to. Christian's origin story doesn't just give us perspective. It gives us this coherent framework, this modern creation story that our global civilization really needs if we're going to make wise choices and move forward responsibly into the Anthropocene. Understanding how everything connects is the first step.
A vital tool for an uncertain future. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.